Thanks, Dan, and thank you very much for your share earlier. It was really lovely to hear your story. It is a trip sitting here at this meeting. This is a huge meeting, and my heart is literally pumping out of my chest right now. It actually feels really good. It's a really good feeling, actually, to have this kind of nervousness. I came to this meeting. It was one of the first meetings that I did when I came to London for the first time, and I actually haven't been here for a long time, and it's good to be here. It's a real honour to be asked to be here and share this with you, so thank you for having me. Oh, what do you want to know? There's lots of people here I don't know, so I think maybe I'll just share a bit of my story and a little bit about what's going on for me today, because there's a lot going on for me right at this moment. I split up with my girlfriend last night. And I actually forgot I was doing this today. And I woke up this morning and Dean sent me this text going, "Are you still up for Trafalgar Square tonight?" I thought it was in March. I thought it was in April. And I woke up this morning on the couch. I just read this thing and I went, "Oh, fuck." Sorry, I know I'm not supposed to do that. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have sworn. Sorry. And not only that, I had another text message from my sponsee. Who said he was going to be there in 15 minutes at my house in 15 minutes. Also, I completely forgot he was coming over. And I just thought, probably need to do both of these things right about now. And I sat there with my sponsee and took him through the steps, and he's really keen. He's really keen. And we were doing, this morning, we were at step 2, 3 and moving into step 4. And he's really enthusiastic and he keeps stopping and going, "So if I do this, will this really work? Will this really happen?" And I'm like, "Trust me," and we had that dialogue going back and forth about the promises and the things that will change if you actually do the work. And you could see him going, "Okay, that's really, man, this shit is awesome like this. Be like reading the book going, "This is awesome, this book is the business." And so he's really enthusiastic and I'm sitting there going, "Wicked," it was just what I needed, actually. It was just what I needed. I have a very effective emotional wall. When I have pain, I have this wall that goes up like that, and it is extremely effective. And I'm trying not to let it come up at the moment because I think I need to feel all of this. So, I got clean in 2006. So I'll be 10 years clean in July the 19th. I'm not there yet. I got to London in 2011. So I've just been here about 5 years now. Half my recovery, I've actually lived here. And I've set up my life here. And I've invested heavily in being in this country. And I think this is a phenomenal country and an amazing city. And I think British people are some of the most incredible people I've ever known. I've made the best friends I've ever had, I have made here. Male friends. I was so good at being friends with all the girls, and since being in recovery, all my mates are predominantly male, and I have good, real relationships with men, good, strong, solid bonds, and they're British, better than I've ever had in Australia. I have worked very hard to build a career here in London, which has been phenomenally difficult. And easy. It's been a weird trip. But where it started for me was I grew up in Perth, Western Australia, and I grew up in an alcoholic home. Mum's an alcoholic, and it was awful. And I always swore that I'd never be like her. And it was eggshells all the time. And it was up and down, open, closed, don't know what's going to happen. And my older sister, she rebelled. And I used to watch her go head to head with my mother, which always ended up in an explosion and high drama and huge amounts of pain. And I used to watch this happen, and I go, okay, I don't need this drama. And so I used to just sit back and just watch, and I sort of became. I didn't challenge her. I never caused that kind of drama. I kind of watched my sister and learnt. But I swore I'd never, ever, ever be like her. Moved to Melbourne in 1995 with mum, and my sister followed about 3 years later. Got into social drinking and using, just smoking weed, just for fun. And the first time I used weed, I was a bong pig immediately. I remember, I was like, I just couldn't stop. I just had bong pipe after pipe after pipe, and ended up seeing spiders on playgrounds and all sorts of stuff. But the thing that really stood out for me was that it took all this fear away. What it did is actually it took away this massive layer of anxiety that I didn't even realise that I had. And it was really effective, and it was really efficient, and it felt fantastic. And I suddenly became able to do all these things that I wasn't able to do. I was able to be social in ways that I wasn't before. I was able to be confident with girls. I was horrible, terrible with girls. I was brought up in a way that my mum taught me that if you like a girl, it was very, very chivalrous, but I didn't know how to be just cool. I'd fall for a girl and I'd be like, I love you. Right? And nothing ever happened. Just terrified that it'd be daylights out of whoever it was. I'd flood them with these epic poems and stuff, like massive romance. And I'd go home to mum and I'd be, Mum, I don't understand. I don't understand everything. I'm doing everything you're telling me to do. I don't get it. She'd be like, sweetie, they just don't deserve you. They don't understand you. So I had no idea what the hell. Oh, it's just gorgeous what you're doing. It's gorgeous. So I never really got it. And smoking weed just chilled me out. I was like, I'm all right, I'm cool. Suddenly I became cool in all the ways I just was never able to be cool. And I was like, sweet! Can you imagine how great that would be? It would be like, ah, the answer. Do you know what I mean? It'd be like, oh. And socially, parties and stuff like that, I was able to be funny and interesting. And, oh, well, do you know what it was? I was able to be myself. That's what it felt like. I was like, finally, I can show people who I really am. And it was a real relief. And I could deal with my mum's drama, and I could deal with my sister's drama. And by this stage, my sister had moved to Melbourne as well. And she was hard into heroin and speed, and she was working on the streets and was like as low as you can possibly get. And, you know, the stuff that sort of only happens in movies. And I'm like, oh, shit, this is happening in my family. You know, I just don't think this would ever happen, but it did. And she was like a train wreck. And I used to look at my mother and my sister and I used to think, I need to use in order to deal with you. And they weren't trustworthy. Like, I couldn't be vulnerable with them. You know, these two women effectively raised me, but they would use what they knew about me to emotionally manipulate me and get what they wanted from me. I hated them for it. I hated them for it. And so I used to think, it got so bad with both of them at different times, I used to think, you know, it's probably better off if you die, if you overdose, if you have a car accident. That's how bad it got. Like, it was so difficult. And my whole family structure was just a total mess. Anyway, it got really bad for my sister, to the point where she had to be institutionalised a number of times. And I remember saying, at this stage, what was it? I was probably about 19, 20 years old. And at this point, I was smoking weed every day. It was, you know, it was necessary for me. Though I was still okay. You know, I was still like just social and whatever, and I'm having a good time and whatnot. I'd get up in the morning and I'd smoke a couple of bongs before I'd even start work. And, you know, so smoking all day. But it was all right for me. It was all right. I was cool. I had it under control. My sister, on the other hand, was in institutions, and my mum was absolutely carnage. She was on the couch all day, just hammered off her face, and you'd have one, you know, it was just a disaster with her too. And my, so one day I'm sitting on the couch on my sister's bed in her flat, and she's coming down off something. I think she was coming off some acid or something, and she was like totally off her face. Just, you know, really, really fucked up. And I sat there again, and I said to her, and I was genuinely worried, and I said, look, Kel, you're going to have to really, you probably need to do like a rehab. And maybe do some of that AA or NA stuff. And she heard me and she said, yeah, okay, you're right, yeah. So she started sort of going along that path. And I actually took her to her first NA meeting. I said, look, I'll come with you. And so I took her to this NA meeting in Melbourne, and I'm sitting out the front with her in my car. And she's like, Tom, I can't go in, I can't do this. And I'm like... I'll come in with you. I'll come in. I'll be your support. So I go in this NA meeting. And I'm sitting there and I'm listening to everyone share, and this dude up the back, he's like a drummer, and he's like, he's got this long hair, and he's like, oh man, I'm like 3 weeks off the smack and all this sort of stuff. And I'm sitting there going, thank fuck, I'm not like these guys. Thank God I don't have to come to meetings and I'm all right, right? So anyway, so what happened was Kelly started doing meetings and she started getting clean. She got a sponsor. Meanwhile, off I went. And I managed to begin a career that was in the field doing things I wanted to do. And that started to sort of build a bit of momentum. And I was going out with this girl who I really genuinely cared about. I grew up, I was taught values when I grew up. I know the difference between right and wrong, right? I was taught enough to know when something I was doing was wrong and something I was doing was right. I knew it in my gut. I know the difference, right? And I grew up with this sort of identity around this vision of myself as someone who had integrity, some measure of integrity, someone who meant what they said, someone who was sensitive and, you know, all that shit. And I was going out with this girl who I genuinely cared about. And we split up. I split up with her. Because it wasn't right. She was much older than me. I was 23 and she wanted to have children and things like that, and I wasn't ready, and it was a disaster, and all we did together was smoke weed anyway. And I knew, I just thought, I'm not ending up with a woman that's just like my mother. You know, it was just, I just saw this, I'm going to marry my mother if I end up. So anyway, so we split up and I started probably having an affair with her best friend, and who I also genuinely really cared about and had a friendship with myself for a long time. And I thought this was okay because we'd split up. I'd split up with her, so this is fine. I knew it wasn't right, but I didn't care. Anyway, one night they get together and have some pills. And it all comes out in this big love confessional fest between the two of them. And so I'm out and I start getting these texts going, we know, it's all right. Oh, the relief. Oh, we know, it's fine. La, 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 la. And I'm like, got away with it. Wicked. Anyway, the next day I'm on my way to work and I get a call from my ex, who's a good woman. And she rings me up and I'm on the way, I'll never forget this. I'm on my way to work and she says, Tom, everything you've ever said to me means nothing. And I never want to see you again. And then I get a call from the other girl about 5 minutes later. Tom, everything you've ever said to me means nothing. And of all the things that they could say to me, that was the thing that could get that got me. And the reason why, I remember looking myself in the mirror, in the rearview mirror, and just thinking, you're not the man that you think you are. You're not the person of integrity and values or whatever that you think you are. And all of my denial around that I was okay just shattered. And I went home And I continued on for a while. I'd moved home at this point. I broke my own cardinal rule and I moved home with my mum, who was still in heavy active addiction. And I had this deal going with her where I'd sit on this side of the couch and I wouldn't say anything about her alcoholism, what she was doing, if she didn't say anything about how much weed I was smoking. And so she sat there hammered and I sat there literally chain smoking joints. At this point, I was chain smoking joints. I was going through about at least an ounce of weed a week. And I always had 4 ounces sitting there just in case. And I always had enough to shout anyone I was with. So it was always a party. And I was smoking at work. And I had a little kit that had Clear Eyes in it, Vegemite, so I could get rid of the, which is your Marmite, get rid of the breath. I had the whole thing. I was kitted out. Little did I know, I was smoking so much weed, I was sweating out this stench of marijuana. Everyone knew what was going on. But I had a good job, good enough job, and I was doing well. Anyway, my sister moves home. She's 2 years sober, clean. She needs to save some money to go overseas. She moves home with mum and me. Now, you can imagine, right? Imagine being 2 years clean, working a hard program. My sister's got food issues as well, so she got heavy into the food recovery. And if I don't know if you know anything about food recovery, but those guys, they are fucking hard. So I'm so sorry. Those guys are hardcore on a whole other level, right? And can you imagine, like, being heavy into the program and going, yeah, I'm just going to move home with my mother and my brother who are in full active addiction. Doesn't it? It's like, forget it, right? Forget it. There's no way I would do that. So she did. She moved home. Anyway, suddenly you've got all this hardcore step stuff coming out of Kelly's bedroom, right? Call your sponsor. Do whatever it takes. Step one, powerless, powerless, powerless. All this stuff, right? It's coming out of her bedroom. And I'm too stoned. I'm like, whatever. I'll sleep through all of it. But my mum, something snaps with my mother, right? And suddenly she's like, Tom, I'm going to AA. And I'm like, amazing, right? Because for me, mum was a write-off. Mum was like gone. Well, you get to the point where it's like, you know, you just stop hoping that someone will change. Cracking the denial of this disease is phenomenally difficult. If you think about the road we went down to actually crack through the denial, to even sit in these bloody chairs, massive, massive thing. Very difficult. Humbling, horribly, horribly humbling experience. So she starts going to AA and I'm thinking, oh, this is a miracle. Literally, this is a miracle that my mother could, maybe my mum might get sober, maybe I'll get my mum back. So she starts going to meetings, right? And all this step stuff starts hammering out of her bedroom, right? So I found this too. And I'm on the couch and I'm smoking weed. I'm happy. I'm like, oh, it's great for you guys. I'm so happy. Right? Meanwhile, I'm like that. Meanwhile, I'm on my way to work and I get these two phone calls. And I come home and I'm sitting across from my mother and I said to my mum, Mum, I've really messed up. And she looks at me and she just goes, yeah, you really have. Nothing I can do for you, Tom. And it was like, oh my God, I'm on my own. That's it. I'm on my own now. I've got nothing left now. I've got, you know, I'm the one that's... Anyway, it took a couple more months for me of going back and forth. I was sort of did the round, the circle, you know, the stop starts. Oh, no, do you know what? Hey, guys, don't worry. Look, I haven't smoked all during the week and I've just got this 1 gram. I'm just going to smoke on Friday night. It'll be fine. And then, of course, by Sunday, I'd have another ounce and I'd be off. Or it'd be the whole, oh, no, it's fine. I'm just drinking light beer. It's cool. I can't give it up because my work, it's too important. My work, the industry I work in, you know, their party. I can't do it. And then I had a glass of wine and I'd be the one, I'm really good at rolling joints, guys, let me roll the joint. And then I'd roll the joint and be like, of course, I don't know what the rules are here, but in Australia, if you roll the joint, you get the first. Mm. So I'd be off again, you know. I didn't have, yeah, So eventually I came to my sister and I said, Kel, I really am messed up. And she said, I said, can you help me? And she said, are you willing to do whatever it takes? And I wanted to punch her. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you don't want to hear that, do you? But you know what, right? I was desperate. And the reason I was desperate was because I wasn't getting stoned anymore. I was chain smoking joints and I wasn't getting stoned. And the fear wasn't getting taken away and the anxiety wasn't going. And it didn't matter how much I smoked. I'd go out to parties and I'd party like a demon and I'd use heaps of speed, or I'd like suck back three heavily potent ecstasy pills and I would try and have sex with everyone in the room without, I mean, I'm exaggerating, but you know what I mean, right? And make a complete fool out of myself. This is what I was doing. And I was destroying everything anyway. And I knew it. And it was very difficult to not face the reality of these two people who were right in front of me that were far worse than me were suddenly getting their life together. And not only that, my sister, this was the thing that really got me, was they became trustworthy. They stopped emotionally manipulating me. They stopped trying to get the better of me. They stopped trying to be sneaky about things. They were straight up. They started becoming straight and consistently. That was massive for me. That for me was like, shit, geez, that's real change. That's not just getting clean or stop using drugs. That's something that's real change. That's an example of someone actually changing for the better. So I was like, okay, I've messed up. I want to do something different. Power of now didn't work. Personal trainer, it hasn't worked. Girlfriend hasn't worked. Work hasn't worked. I'll try this. And so I said to my sister, what meeting should I go to? And she gave me a list, and so I started doing meetings. And it was awful. God, it was awful. I had long blonde hair. I looked like a stoner. I was about 60 kilos. I don't know how many stone that is, but I was skinny. I was gaunt. I was very pale. And I thought I looked awesome, but I was very sick. And I would stand up at the front of these meetings, and I would share about how uncomfortable it was and how humiliated I was that I was a drug addict and I needed help. The reason why I did that was because I was desperate for something to change. Absolutely desperate and willing to do anything. And the reason why I started coming here was partly because I'd done everything else, I'd tried everything else, but more than anything else, there was evidence in these people, my mother and my sister, that something actually worked here. And I think that was the main thing. My life was just so full of denial, dishonesty on some level, lies, etc. Having something that was real, that I knew was real, was like a beacon of, like, it was like an oasis. I felt safe suddenly. I felt safe and secure on the inside in some weird way for the first time in a really long time. And it felt like I was cold and shivering on the inside of my skin. That's what it felt like. And it was like, oh, it feels a bit warmer with that thought. So that's why I started coming here. Anyway, so I started coming here. I got a sponsor, started working the steps, did everything. I just shut my mouth, opened my ears, did everything the opposite. And I hammered the meetings. I did 19 meetings in 90 days. I ended up doing a meeting every day for a year. I thought to myself, if I have to give up my career, I will. I really had to sit there because I'm an ambitious person. And my work and my dreams, etc., are a huge part of what have defined me. And I thought, you know what? It's not worth it. If I can't actually get off this horrible hellhole cycle of insanity, it's not worth it, I'll give it up. So I really was. I was really willing to do anything. So I got clean. And I stayed clean. And I've been clean ever since. And I've got better and better. Slowly but surely, the anxiety's dissipated. I've done the steps. I've done the steps multiple times, without a doubt. Anyone who's really struggling and wondering what the hell's wrong, and you haven't done the steps, do the steps. It's just do them and give it everything. They have given me everything. I've done service at all the levels, and I've done it consistently, and I've been committed 100%, because I had nothing left. And I had, when I came to recovery, I had this big lead flaming ball hanging from my throat by a fishing line. That's what it felt like, in my guts, like that. And it would bounce around in my chest like this. That's what it felt like, I kid you not. And it's gone now. I sleep through the night. I don't sweat anymore. I'm honest, even when it means I might look like a dick. That has been the key, massive key. And I've tried to work with others better at sometimes than other times. So then that brings me into recovery. So recovery itself's been a ride. So I got into recovery because I thought, okay, maybe if I get clean, I can actually become the man that I thought that I was, for real. Maybe if I get clean, I can turn it around and really become a man of integrity and the person I had in my head that I thought I was. So what did I do? I started confronting fears around work. That was a big thing for me. So my work, I work in television. I edit television programs. That's my job. And my passion is filmmaking. And I spend all of my money on making my own films. That's what I do. And I'm telling you that. Normally I never share that. But I'm telling you that because it plays a huge part in the spiritual crisis that I had in the last 5 years. So I got a job. I was working at this place when I got clean, and I ended up leaving. I ended up becoming a contractor, working for myself. And that was really an amazing thing, because suddenly I found myself worth being paid a good amount of money for a skilled job. And it gave me huge amounts of self-esteem. As a result of doing this stuff, I was given the tools that I needed in order to confront massive fears in the real world. Massive, massive fears. And I did it, and you know what happened? I felt good about myself, and my self-esteem grew. And this all happened really gradually. And so I built on that, and I started building relationships in my industry. And I started doing better and better work. And I started climbing and climbing and climbing, and getting better and better and better. And I slowly started to build this identity and realization of the dream I had in my head of what I wanted to do. And I got to the top. I got to the top in my industry in Australia. I got to the top and worked on a new program in Australia that ended up winning us an Emmy Award, which is like, what? Right? When I got into recovery, before I got into recovery, I was editing wedding videos. And I used to sit there looking at the TV going, oh, wouldn't it be amazing if something I did could be on that? Imagine, right? That's what it was like. And I found myself in this situation where I was doing the highest end stuff. And I started working on a film. I wanted to make my own film, and my mentor at work said, why don't you make your own film? So I started making this film about the creative process, and I started following my boss and my girlfriend at the time, who were both musicians. And it was a terrible, terribly difficult process. I was lost. It was a learning experience. I didn't know what I was doing. And it brought up all of my insecurities and fears and blah, blah, blah. And the relationship was a disaster anyway. And it came to an end in 2009. But the film continued. That was after 3 years. 3 years of work. And I came over to London in 2011, and just before I came over to London, my plan was to come over here and finish this thing and use it as a way to get to the next stage. Now, this film was everything to me, absolutely everything. It meant everything. I had everything invested in it. It was everything that I did outside of my paid work. It was just... And I had this huge amount of identity wrapped up in what it could bring me when it was done, what it was going to do. and this massive amount of importance around it having to be good and all this stuff. Anyway, I had a massive falling out with my ex-girlfriend, and she told me that she wanted nothing more to do with me or the film, and she wanted me to remove her from the whole thing. Which destroyed the project. And I came to London and I was like, what am I going to do? And I started again. I came over here because I wanted to... I met a French girl and wanted to spend time with my dad and wanted an amazing adventure in Europe. And I thought, what am I going to do? I have to finish this thing. So I spent another 2 years. I made a decision. I thought, okay, I'll finish it. And I'll finish it with... I'll put her in it. I'll try and be fair. I'll try and do the right thing. I'll finish it. And I'll send it to her. And hopefully it'll be okay. But if it's not, I accept the fact that it'll just have to sit on the shelf. And anyway, another 2 years went by and I finished this thing. And it took everything I had. And I sent it to her and she told me to go myself in the biggest, most horrible way. And I went into a spiral, massive spiral. And the reason why is because I sat there and I thought, how did I get myself in a situation where I've hurt someone so much? How did I get myself in a situation where, like, my whole life collapsed? I had a spiritual crisis because suddenly God disappeared from me. Because I'd put so much into faith around what, in the action that I was taking with this project, and it was a disaster, and I had a massive spiritual crisis, and I was in London, and I was alone and lonely, and completely wrecked, and. Anyway, cut a long story short with that, I had to accept. I had to accept that things just don't work out the way you want them to sometimes. Even when you claim, even when you do the right thing, or think you're doing the right thing, even when you think you're living by spiritual principles. So I had to let it go, and it was really difficult. And I found myself having to find a reconnect somehow to a power greater than myself and have faith again, find faith again. And it was really difficult. And I was not a very pleasant person to be around. I was terrified. I didn't know anybody here. I didn't trust anybody here. I felt like everyone I met thought I was trying to get something from them. And I was constantly on the back foot. And it was very, very, very difficult. I felt like a very much an outsider, and but I kept coming to meetings, and I kept my sponsor, and I got one of the most incredibly intense service positions I've ever had in my life, and stuck at it because I thought, I don't want to use. Meanwhile, my sister relapsed. Just under 10 years clean. My mum's still clean. She's about 11 years clean. My sister's clean again now, but she relapsed. And that frightened me. And I thought, I absolutely do not want to use drugs. And so, as I said, I kept coming to meetings and I kept doing the next right thing. And eventually my ex-girlfriend was willing to talk to me about it. And we were able to resolve the problem. And eventually I got what I wanted. But it wasn't before a massive surrender on my part and a massive, a load of humility. And do you know what? I think I'm just really lucky. It could have gone the other way. I managed to get it all back. I managed to solve the problem and fix it. Okay. Anyway, so since then I've sort of had to... What it did was it just sort of made me realise... Do you know what it made me realise as well? When it all fell apart, I didn't have anything. I didn't have any friends. I didn't have any people in my life. And I realised that everything that was important to me was... everything I was living my life for was was completely what's the word? Yeah, materialistic. What's the word? It's like really. No, it's just. Come on, chop us out, guys. Come on.
Shallow.
It was really, really shallow. It was really superficial. Totally superficial. And so I started putting all my efforts into building friendships, really building friendships. And so subsequently, I've built over the last 3 years these phenomenal friendships. And as a result, my faith has returned. And you know, it's funny, I think that's really where it's come back, is it's come back as a result of these relationships that I've built up. And I've realized that it's the relationships in my life that mean more than anything at all. And I'm no longer defined by this career, this dream and this passion and this thing that I want to achieve. It's still important to me and I still love doing it and I'm never going to stop doing it because it is a part of me, but it's not all of who I am. And now, you know, I have sponsees suddenly and I have... do you know what? Nothing is better than helping someone else go through this process. There's nothing better. Anyway, so... I moved over here to be with this, also to be with this girl, and I've worked really hard on this relationship. Relationships are the hardest thing I've ever found. They're harder than anything else. Staying in a relationship's got to be the hardest thing I've ever had to go through, and confronting, and yeah. This week it's sort of, I got to a point where all of the effort that I'd put in to try and solve our problems and make it work, I realised that the problems weren't going to change. And I sat down and had a conversation with her last night and we split up. And I'm kind of in this weird bubble around it of... You know what it's like? It's really up and down. But, and you know, the consequences of me splitting up with her are massive. The only reason I'm in this country right now is because of her. So splitting up with her means I might have to face the prospect of moving back to Australia, which is terrifying, especially after everything I've put in and all the relationships that I've built and whatnot. And even saying that makes me feel sick. But I want to do the right thing in my life. And the right thing is to be honest about how I feel, and if whatever consequences they may be, I have to face those consequences. I have to have faith. So I'm trying to demonstrate faith. And I want to do the right thing. That is the only way I've ever had freedom. And despite the possible consequences of my decision, I have freedom because I am being true to myself. And I am saving her and me a huge amount of potential harm. And I'm okay with whatever is to come. I've let go of what I want. This career that I think I'm building here. Okay, you can have it. These friends that I've built here, they'll still be friends, even if I'm on another continent. And then something else will happen. Something else amazing will happen. Because that's been my experience over 10 years. Some amazing things have happened and surprised me constantly. So I'm in a bit of a weird space, everyone. And I really appreciate your attention and you listening to me talk tonight and hearing my story. And thank you very much.